Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is Sally O'Cordy. This is unbelievable. This is Friday the 13th. And I am living every minute of it. Please forgive that coughing, but I've been running like a mad woman. And now there's music playing. What's going on? Oh, all right. Hold on, everyone, please. Jeanette?
Yes, I'm Jeanette? Here, Sally. Yes,
right there,
can you hear me?
Right there. Yes, you must. Yes, I can hear you well. Thank you. Just hold on a second. Everything has gone wrong so far, but we are going to start the show again. I can't believe how many things. This is Friday the 13th. Don't you feel it? I know I.
Yes.
Yes. Well, okay. We're starting the show now. Okay. This is Sally O'Cordy, and welcome to Public Advocate Radio. My guest today is Jeanette E. Robb. And Jeanette Robb has a son who is on the autism spectrum. She is going to describe for you in a monologue how he regressed and where he is at today in the final analysis. Welcome, Jeanette, my good friend. I hope you will share with the audience the story of your son's regression. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for that, Sally. Yes, I'll go through it. My son Danny is now 35. He was born back in 1979, and when he was 3 months old, he was given his first vaccines, which were diphtheria, pertussis, and tetanus, or DPT. And as was usual at that time, he had 3 doses of DPT. Now, we realise now, looking back, that there definitely was something different about Danny. But he was a first and an only child, so we didn't have another with whom to compare him. He cried so much during the day and at night time as well because he couldn't sleep. We didn't understand it at all. But in fact, it got so bad at one point, I went to the GP in desperation, and he gave us a mild sedative for Danny to help him sleep. That was bliss. He was really 5 years old before he slept through the night, so it was a long, hard spell. But before school, he had non-stop colds, tonsillitis, chest infections, lots of antibiotics, and nobody else, other people's children didn't seem to have all these illnesses. We didn't know why our son was different. He enjoyed playgroup. He could run around excitedly and play with the other children. But he didn't quite play like the others. I couldn't quite put my finger on it at the time. He couldn't settle down to a jigsaw. He had to be running about doing something physical. And it wasn't really until he started school that problems became more obvious. I think he expected to be able to continue playgroup behaviour, which of course was not acceptable in the classroom. He couldn't concentrate, he couldn't organise himself, he couldn't tie his laces or pack his bag. He was made to sit alone in the naughty corner, which he hated because he was such a gregarious little boy. Teachers were shouting at him and constantly punishing him, and he began having nightmares. And he was bullied, not just by other children, but by teachers as well. Year after year, we got rotten reports about his lack of concentration and his inability to look after his own belongings. We didn't know what was wrong. By the time he was 8 years old, I moved him to a local private school as a day pupil. The classes were much smaller and no bullying whatsoever was tolerated. So we made friends. It was a good move. And he joined after school clubs, played chess. He wasn't very good at the physical things like rugby and football. They were a bit too rough for him. that he did start playing golf when he was 9. He's still a good golfer, but he hasn't had the chance in recent years to play much golf. Then when he got into his teens, things improved, and we started getting good reports from school. We couldn't understand this. Of course, we were delighted. But whatever was hanging about Danny for all these years seemed to be disappearing. Now, Jacqueline McCandless mentions transient autism in her book. So we often wonder if this happened to Danny and it kind of disappeared when he was in his teens, early teens. His head teacher said he wasn't a high flyer, but he could go to university when he was a bit older. We were really happy. Then that same year, this was in 1994, he was 15 by this time, he was called down to the local surgery and he was given MMR, DT, which is diphtheria, tetanus, and polio. Now, I had no idea about vaccines in those days, but I can't even remember getting a letter, a permission form to sign, but I must have had one. Just signed it, sent it back with him to school or to the surgery. And he was given six vaccines in one day. This was the year also that in UK they did a catch-up scheme because they realised that people of Danny's age hadn't been given MMR in childhood because MMR wasn't introduced here until 1988. So I think perhaps the local surgery was being over-organised, over-efficient, and had gone ahead themselves and invited the teenagers to go in and get MMR. However, the health bodies, they sent teams round the schools that year giving teenagers MR. So that was 5 months later after the first batch, he got MR at school. Now, I don't know which had the worst effect, but Danny himself says that after the first lot at the surgery, when he had MMR and DT and polio, that within a week he started feeling different. He was very, very hyper, he felt, and he was paranoid and social withdrawal. We could see that coming through, and irrational fear. He stopped going to stay with friends and he wouldn't want anyone invited to the house. This was so strange for Danny because he was such a gregarious boy. So he struggled through the 18 months after that and passed his exams. I don't know how he managed that. It must have required a massive effort on his part, but he did it. But over time, he then developed clinical depression. Danny himself says that he was trying so hard to control his hyperactivity that when he couldn't do it, that made him depressed. So at age 16, he was prescribed Paxil. Now, Paxil is an SSRI antidepressant, and nowadays it is not recommended for people under 25 because of the potential damage it can cause to still developing brains. But he was left on this drug unmonitored for 5 years. Strange things started happening to him that we couldn't understand. We took him to the doctors, but they couldn't understand. We expressed concern at the continued use of Seroxat, but we were treated like over-anxious parents. In fact, they raised the dosage at one point, which is not uncommon. We did try to reduce it, not knowing how slowly it should be done, but he became terribly paranoid when it was reduced. There was so much we didn't know. We didn't know that Seroxat, too vulnerable people, could cause a lot of harm, especially young people. It can cause symptoms of bipolar and schizophrenia. Eventually, after 5 years on this drug, Ben became completely manic. Now, I say this in the wisdom of hindsight. And he was also developing an atypical psychosis. Now, mania is dreadful. It's very difficult to live with, not just for the person who's suffering it, but for the family and people with whom he spends time. There are so many different ways it can affect a person. It causes recklessness, alcohol abuse, extreme extroversion, overspending, endless energy, and of course, psychosis. Back in the early 90s, the Food and Drug Administration in USA received reports of side effects such as delirium, hallucinations, convulsions, violent hostility, and psychosis, suicides, attempted suicides, but they took no action. These conditions were not included on the package inserts. In fact, it was the Freedom of Information Act that brought them to light. Now, round about this time, my husband received an unexpected phone call from an ex-colleague telling him of a temporary post in the south of Spain. He was offered a job as financial controller with a Swedish company in Marbella. This was like a dream come true to us. We all loved Spain. We went there on holidays. And I had worked there for 3 years when I was young. So we thought, too, that this would help Danny. It might change his behaviour. We couldn't understand why his behaviour was so different from what it had been when he was younger. So off we went. Danny was 22 by this time. But it was just after, a couple of weeks after we arrived in Spain, this atypical psychosis emerged in Danny and he had to be hospitalised. Now, at a later date, I found a study done back in 2001 by Utah University, and they said that 8% of psychiatric admissions are suffering from SSRI-induced psychosis. However, the Spanish hospital consultant said he was suffering delirium. Delirium can result in hallucinations, irrational talk, and has frequently been confused with schizophrenia. And one recognized cause of delirium is drug toxicity. Now, the consultant stopped Zoloft immediately. At first, we thought it was very wrong to do this, but we discovered later that delirium can lead to permanent brain damage or even death, so perhaps the consultant felt he had no choice. The consultant also prescribed antipsychotic drugs, and these had an immediate effect on Danny. But we didn't know what was SSRI withdrawal or what was side effects of the drugs. We know now, 13 years later, that what he was showing signs of was antipsychotic-induced Tourette's. It was very difficult. And one particular drug, when the dose is high enough, he goes on to actually say, you know, swear words to passers-by. That was really hard. It's called coprolalia. But he also gets physical tics and jerks that are associated with Tourette's. After a while, after 6 weeks in Spain in hospital, we were told that he was not responding to antipsychotics. They only took 6 weeks to notice that. Here we are 13 years later in Scotland and he's still being plied with them. They told us to take him back home. They also said that he had a kind of autism. Now, that was hard when we got back here. He was actually about 24, 25 before we sought a diagnosis. He is now diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome, but psychiatrists were not happy about this. They didn't want to accept this. So Danny's actually been diagnosed 4 times, and still they're questioning it. I don't think they want to be proved wrong. Danny spent the rest of that year in hospital, home here in Scotland, been tried on different drugs, and it was awful. The side effects, we could see that the treatment was making him worse. Eventually, when he got out, I took him straight to a homeopathic doctor, and she gave him MMR antidote. She really brought my attention to what the damage that the vaccines could do. She gave him other treatments, and after a year, 18 months, 2 years, she started reducing the antipsychotics, and all Danny's psychotic symptoms disappeared. So I knew then for sure that the drugs were causing so much of his symptoms. However, the homeopathic doctor, it wasn't just Danny she was helping, she was also helping me. She gave me books to read and helped educate me or take the blindfold off my eyes. I really felt as if I'd been wearing a blindfold all my life, totally unaware of the underworld within our health service and government. So I started reading up about vaccines and the drugs. I went to a lecture where Vera Scheibner was speaking, and I met Joan Campbell. I heard about the JABS board. I heard about the MMR litigation, and I eventually joined JABS, and it was really thanks to JABS that I found that Danny had Asperger's syndrome. A mum came on one day asking for childhood symptoms, so I looked them up, and the childhood symptoms were just as Danny had been when he was a child. I can't really blame the Asperger side of things on the MMR when he was 15, but it certainly set in motion some kind of neuropsychiatric condition, which then had a knock-on effect. I went to the GP, and he said, oh, yes. He said, I think he has got Asperger's syndrome. But, yes, it was later that I got a formal diagnosis. I found that without a formal diagnosis, you can't access any support services. I did tell the GP also about the MMR litigation and that I had planned to get into that. But he said that will come to nothing because you're up against the drug companies. Now, he spoke as if this would be a major stumbling block, but at that time I was very naive. I had an unquestioning faith in our legal system, in the medical agencies and the government, and I really believed that someone somewhere would be shocked at what was happening to my son and thousands of others, and that justice would be done. Of course, it hasn't happened. I had a lot to learn. The GP was right. By the time Danny was 25, I'd read enough about SSRIs to realise they were doing untold harm, and I asked for him to be taken off the SSRI. Now, the SSRI, it should take years to come off slowly, but he was off them in 6 months. But then followed 4 or 5 years of sheer hell for Danny, long stressful spells in hospital, endless bombardment of antipsychotics. I think that was a protracted withdrawal from a total of 9 years on SSRIs. There is a particular SSI withdrawal syndrome. I don't know if it was if there was much information on the internet about it then, but there is now. Many patients are now advised not even to come off that type of drug. But where psychiatry is concerned, our having involved the homeopathic doctor had a dreadful effect. I became the enemy. Mother is interfering. So they sectioned him. He had long periods of hospitalisation, drug experimentation, depot antipsychotics. They were dreadful for him. They caused extreme suffering. During 1 3-year spell, Danny had 15 changes of antipsychotic medication. It was dreadful. His treatment has been described as barbaric, cruel, and one member of the health team said no human being should be made to suffer like Danny has. However, eventually we crossed the path with a psychiatrist who specialised in Asperger's syndrome, and after a long battle we got Danny into an autism specific unit. He's been there for 4.5 years now. Yeah, the first couple of years he really came on very well. It was like as if he was coming out of PTSD. But after a couple of years, the healing process seemed to level off. And that is because we are seeing side effects of the drugs he still has to take, in our opinion. However, this year I contacted Professor David Healy. He's a UK SSRI man. He has introduced a new service. An online video consultation was organised for us, and he sent us a written report. He believes the drugs are causing Tourette's in Danny, and he recommends that Danny come off at least one of the drugs, if not both of them. But, as to be expected, the reaction from his Danny's present community psychiatrist, knee-jerk reaction, is he wants to raise the drug dosage. So the battle against professionals is still ongoing. Now, this being misdiagnosed in adults, especially late-diagnosed adults with Asperger's syndrome, being misdiagnosed with schizophrenia or bipolar or some other serious mental disorder, is not uncommon and is a huge problem, because then you have to go to psychiatry and persuade them that they have made a mistake and that they should undo the harm that they're doing. And that's a hard one. But with Professor David Healy's help, we hope to get round that one. Meantime, Danny's life has been ruined. He's missed out on his education, his training, a career, relationships, friends, and he's lost his freedom and his sanity. So still we carry on. We're going to do our best, no matter what it takes, to find someone somewhere who will listen to what we have to say and try and help Danny out of this mess. So vaccines, psychiatric drugs. I'm a very different person now from what I was 13 years ago. And I feel I know a lot more about what's going on in this country and other countries. My eyes are open to the lies and the deceit and the greed. I don't think I'll ever be able to go back to the naive little person I was a long time ago. I'll stop there, Sir Sally. Hello.
Thank you very much, Jeanette E. Robb. You're calling from Scotland. You live in Scotland?
Yes, I live in the west coast of Scotland, on the Clyde Estuary. But I follow what you're doing a lot, Sally, and I really admire what you're doing and your determination and your strength to carry on in your mission. The very best of luck to you.
Hello? Thank you very much. Yes, hi, Jeanette. I was having another coughing fit. Thank you very much. Today we have an event in Manhattan. We are trying to stop them from giving between 54 and 59 doses of vaccines to children through the age of 5, the most in the world that I realize, and a 1.2% cap on exemptions, which means it's a 98.8% mandate. It includes the H1N1 flu shot for the youngest annually, and we are doing our level best to prevent the children from dying. I am saying to people, don't worry your pretty little head about autism. The kid will not live that long. So you want to take advantage, quote, unquote, advantage of the city's daycare, preschool, or kindergarten, it may cost your child their life. And I have done enough interviews with regard to shaken baby syndrome to know that this is a path to jail for the parents, because the pharmaceutical companies and the administrators of these vaccines are completely protected. They are not liable, leaving the only people liable are the people who are the caretakers, which are the parents, the poor 14-year-old babysitter, the aunt who stopped by, you know, oh, my Lord. So we are facing a catharsis here. I thank you so much for shedding light the way that you just have about this extremely complicated, yet just one tragedy after the next in terms of how your son has been handled by the system. And you are a dear dear person, I cannot thank you enough for all that I have learned from you, Jeanette Robb. And I thank you. And tonight we are doing a screening of Vaccines Cause Autism. And Jeanette Robb is starring in it, along with Joan Campbell, Donna Lovelace, and Dr. Rebecca Carley. So I'm very eager for this evening's show. It is the ultimate horror film for Friday the 13th. Would you not agree?
Yes, absolutely. And the very best of luck with that, Sally.
I hope it's successful.
Okay.
Thank you. I appreciate that so much. All the best to you, my friend. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Sally, and good luck. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, dear.